There's no part in the world where it doesn't still need to happen.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. I babysat. You know what I mean? There should be a Me Too movement for babysitters.
Yes.
There should be a Me Too movement for people who work in garden centres. There should be a Me Too movement. Like, it's...
Yes.
It just hasn't percolated through, has it?
Welcome to Women Are Mad, where we invite women to bring their anger into everyday conversation. I'm Salima Saxton, I'm an actress and writer.
I'm Jennifer Cox, and I'm a psychotherapist. We noticed that anger is the one emotion that women aren't allowed to openly express. Meanwhile, everything around us is making us absolutely furious.
We're all feeling it. Let's get together to work out what to do with it.
Salima, what's made you mad this week?
I thought it was quite interesting how the brilliant Claudia Winkleman has left her great show that I love, actually, on Radio
2.
I know the age of her kids, so I'm thinking it's lots to do with that. But she has said that, hasn't she?
Yeah. I think one's leaving home, and
yes, exactly. Yeah. And it did make me reflect on where we all are as mums and how we're all frantically racing around. It's not just me racing.
Yeah.
Pinging like a little ping pong ball.
Yeah. And not getting it right ever.
Yes.
But also really interesting that a man, Ramesh, is taking over.
Yes, absolutely. He's got
with his brood of children.
Yes, true.
Seemingly not part of his decision making. I mean, we don't know. Who knows?
No,
but
sure.
it is interesting that it is still a father coming in.
Yes. Yeah.
To take up the reins.
I think it just makes me reflect on whatever we do, like you and I have dealt with the younger years of children slightly differently, probably because you were training and things like that. And I was I was a stay-at-home mum, really, wasn't I? But there's no magic bullet, is there? There's no guarantee that one works and the other doesn't.
And I think it's that the guilt gets you either way.
It does. Yes. Yeah. Even if you volunteered for all the Christmas parties, even if you were there for every Christmas dingle, is that what it's called?
I love that it's called a Christmas dingle.
Dingle.
It was really making me giggle.
Yes, sorry, I'm not sure if I've got that
Jesus's
right.
Dingle.
Yeah, let's not go there. But yeah, even if you were there for every dingle, and things can still come up, and it doesn't mean that everybody is safe and sound and straightforward and immaculate forevermore because you ticked off all the nice things on the list. You just have to do whatever you can and what you feel is right in your heart.
Yeah. And I guess
your
also,
family.
And try not to blame oneself for like discreet decisions along the way, which we'll never know.
Yes.
If they were the catalyst for, you know, the situation you're now dealing with or are dealing with in teenhood or 20s or whatever. I think there's so many complexities that go into it.
And also, you know, to acknowledge that most of us are just trying our hardest.
In psychoanalysis, there's a real drive against perfection. And instead, you want to always be going for good enough because life isn't perfect. So if you bring up kids to sort of have this really brittle understanding of what's expected of them and what other people will likely provide them with, then they have no equipment.
Right. Yes.
So, our guest today is extremely funny and disarmingly analytical. She's a comedian and comedy writer who, among other TV appearances, co-wrote and starred in her own sitcom, Nowhere Fast, and has had several sold-out runs at the Edinburgh Festival. Please welcome the very impressive Alison Spittle. Okay, right. Alison, we're just going to launch straight in, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Could you tell us what makes you angry?
The idea that justice doesn't exist. Because like when I was younger, I don't know, I think through media and stuff, you kind of believe... You were led to believe that or injustice happens. But the more you go through life, the more you realize it doesn't happen. God, this sounds so petty. But like, and you just, you get angry, and then you get angry with yourself for feeling angry. And I just would rather if we were told from a young age that like sometimes people do bad things or shit stuff happens. And that, yeah, that's what makes me angry.
Give us examples of this horrible realization.
Me Too movement, I would say. Funny, because anytime there's like hints where they're going like, oh, someone's going to get done, and you go through about 8 different names before the person who does get done, you're like, oh, them, okay. But there's so many others like that. That's a good example.
As a woman navigating comedy, stand-up comedy, is it a world where you think Me Too might still need to...
There's no part in the world where it doesn't still need to happen.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. I babysat. You know what I mean? There should be a Me Too movement for babysitters.
Yes.
There should be Absolutely. A Me Too movement for people who work in garden centres. There should be a Me Too movement. Like,
It just hasn't percolated through.
No one's going to have a big scoop on, like... It's not interesting to read about people who manage garden centres who also touch up their employees.
Right. Yeah, it's not salacious.
That's true.
It has to have some kind of glamour to get currency, which is incredible.
Yeah, and the currency of comedy is that like, oh, but you're being funny, so isn't everything supposed to be funny? You know what I mean? That is the glamour of it.
In a way. But yeah, I think essentially that does make me angry, and that is the thing I go to therapy for, is to like try and get rid of that anger.
Is it clearly, you know, that that's why you're in therapy?
Definitely. Yeah.
I mean, I'm really interested in this now, and I want to ask you a lot more, but would it be probing into very personal areas?
Well, I did a stand-up show about it last year called Where, and that was what I love about stand-up. I love it more than any other medium in regards to talking about stuff, is that I had my own power to talk about it. I controlled the narrative because, like, yeah, with Wet, I talked about an incident that, like, I didn't really hold on to as, like, sexual harassment before. I was just like, that man's being weird. But now that I look back at it, because it's like 10 years ago or whatever, you know, and I'm older, I'm like, well, that was, like, wrong. And basically what happened was, like, there was this man who told me how powerful he was. The conversation had gone from what careers he's destroyed, what careers he's helped make. And then he said, this was after a gig, and he said, like, you think you did well? And I said, yes, because I didn't learn at that point to be humble about stuff. Like, when I'm excited about stuff.
Should you be, Alison? I mean...
When you survive, you should show humbleness, because people don't like it when you're not humble. And therefore, there's no point in bringing any... Like, it's like Squid Game. You watch a Squid Game at the moment.
A bit.
I've seen it, yeah.
So, like, as soon as people say that they have a talent at something or they're excited about something, they're gone. Like, within the next possible time that they're able to... You're best off to do well in a Good Game and to do well in life. You're best off keeping the head down and hoping nothing bad happens to you. And you'll have a happy life. And you'll probably get to the final of Squid Game, you know?
Okay, so I'm going to agree with you about Squid Game, but I'm not going to agree with you about life.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Not. Because I think, as a reforms people pleaser, I used to be this and mute it, shrink it, do it down, let you go first, change the subject to you rather than me, belittle myself, joke about myself, all in order to be humble.
Yeah.
But I now think, if I'm good at something, if I am really winning at something, I don't have to be arrogant in order to celebrate that and to tell you that. I can tell you.
How do you do that without being arrogant? Now I'm interested. The thing about me is I'm a people pleaser.
Right.
And the thing I don't like in other people is arrogance, even though it might not even be arrogance, but I have this weird chip on my shoulder about something that I will hold against you. How do you prevent people like me with low self-esteem and issues in their life from being an arsehole to you or like preventing, you know?
Well, I can't. And I don't.
Yeah.
But I know that your feelings are yours.
And yeah.
Mine are mine. And I will no longer shrink so that I don't get on. Because also, there's not much time on this planet, is there?
So I just, that's true.
I've got to get on, Alison. Can we ask a psychotherapist?
Because this is so fascinating. I love this because it does feel like this is the tussle that most people are completely crushed by. So do you either listen to the attack, listen to the insecurities and the frailties of other people coming at you as if it belongs to you, as if it's yours and it's true? Or do you decide, no, I'm doing me? And actually, when you just break it down like that, there is nothing arrogant about just doing you and deciding, I'm going to live my
life. Didn't you just do a bloody brilliant gig coming back to that guy and you come off stage? I mean, presumably it had gone really well.
It did go really well, but he told me that I was technically very bad at comedy. And if I wanted another gig off him, I'd have to wrap my lips around the back of his dick to get another gig off him. So I think there was like a different, I think he was going for a different angle there. Is it negging?
Yeah, is that what negging is?
No, this is pure sexual harassment. I mean,
I think my problem with it was that maybe because on the scale of stuff, I was like, not the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
But the abuse of power, it's a very clear abuse of power. And I know this is what women do all the time, though. It's not the worst thing. It could be worse. Look what happened to her over there.
Genuinely, yes. Yes. So I just kind of saw mine on a scale of it could have been worse kind of thing. And I did once I realized I didn't even put that in like a little box of like, that's a negative thing, I should stay away from him, because I continued to work for him for a long time after that, because I felt like I was doing something I love, doing stand-up comedy, and to do something that I love meant to work in environments that I might not feel comfortable in. So I would do that, because then I'd be like, well, then you deserve to thrive at stand-up comedy if you do stuff that you don't feel comfortable with or happy with and stuff. So I continued to work for him, which is weird, isn't it?
So that's interesting. So you deserve to get the big prize if it's uncomfortable and horrible and messy and gross.
Yeah. If another person had a path that was less sexually harassy, or I would resent them. I think I'm angry over that, and I need to get rid of that anger, because it's not going to help me in the long run with anything, you know?
I also thought it was interesting how you said you resent other people who haven't had that.
I think it's Catholicism or ex-Catholicism. It's like residual Catholicism. And it's that weird thing as well. Everyone does this of making their own fairy tale lore of their journey. It can't be enough that you just want to do comedy. It has to be like a story of like how you started comedy, how you continued despite whatever. Do you know what I mean? Everyone makes up their real Hollywood stories.
That's a great phrase, the fairy tale lore of everything. Because I think we can all do that, can't we? Fall into the romance of a story of our lives, and then justify certain behaviours of people maybe even in that world because it's part of that fairy tale.
Definitely. I mean, that's why a lot of people stay in marriages that are not happy in.
Yes.
It's because if I get out of this, this is not the happy ending that I was told I was promised or I deserved. And if I do divorce, then that nullifies every kind of happy memory I've had before or whatever. Even though, no matter if the relationship ends or whatever, and you did have happy times, those are still happy times that you can remember. And if you stay with the person and it becomes even worse, I don't know how happy those memories would be anyway.
And also, I mean, it's interesting thinking about it like a marriage, because if you think about how many women are stuck in relationships that actually are probably, if you took them to court, would be found to be controlling, again, coercive, and that she would have very little control over her finances or her social life or whatever it is. You know, there is a lot of really, really borderline criminal behaviour going on within households that gets explained away, or, oh, I better not because, oh, he wouldn't like that. And it's all very minimised. And I think what you're saying in the comedy world is kind of similar, that these relationships are accepted as normal or par for the course, and written off as, yeah, other people might weave them into a hilarious anecdote or something on stage, but actually it's terrible. And back to what you said at the beginning about justice, I think while we're all going around pretending that this stuff is, well, that's part of the industry, and almost like casting couch idea, that effectively we're not moving any of this stuff on, and things like Me Too come and go instead of eliciting real change.
Yeah, I think maybe the other thing is, like, anger feels, especially righteous anger, where it's weird, like, as well, where you look at something and you go, that person's a bad person. I'm angry at that person, and I have a right to be angry at that person. And it feels great because you're just, like, allowed to feel that feeling.
Yeah,
people will allow you.
Yeah. Yes, and that's a good point about the righteousness almost giving us like a kind of ego boost, or a kind of...
Also the chance to ruminate, though, on stuff.
Like, what do you mean?
Well, like, to ruminate on situations. Like, if you ruminate on a complicated situation where you have to look at your behaviour and think about what you've done. Like, I don't look back at that time with that person, the man, on the couch kind of thing, as a, like, I didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing I, you know, I'm very, like, I feel to myself that I'm blameless in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I like thinking about it then, because I'm like, oh, I don't have any feelings about my behaviour and what I should have done. And there's other times where I've fallen out of a mate, or and, you know, it's definitely my fault as well, or there's some aspect to me that I don't like about myself that comes out there, and I don't like ruminating on that. Because then I have to ruminate and think about my own behaviour, which probably means I don't change for the better. But that's for my therapist.
But then isn't this the point? Like, if you're self-aware enough to know that you've had a part to play and you're thinking about that, this is then the chance that your brain is offering you the opportunity to do something different next time, or even to apologise or make amends or whatever it is.
Yeah. I think, like, a part of me was always very afraid of not being self-aware. I would look at people that weren't self-aware and I thought to myself, I really don't want to be that person. It's the thing I don't want to be, is that. But then you become self-aware and then you're like, what good is it?
It's horrible. Oh,
yeah.
I think also, becoming self-aware also, it takes the mask off yourself, but also the mask of other people, doesn't it?
Well, you have to call it the real thing.
And that's a bit painful.
Yeah.
That is being painful.
Yeah.
Alison, when did you last get angry with somebody?
Ooh, the last time I got angry with somebody, I got angry with myself. I did a quiz show and I lost the last round, and I was angry with myself for missing the question. But then I watched myself on telly and I was angry with myself for showing my anger or showing my disappointment or just making it weird. Yeah.
But why is that weird to show that anger?
I have been programmed from a very young age not to show anger in order to protect yourself. You know what I mean?
So a lighter question.
Yeah.
When has anger driven you to do something incredible? And that could be good or bad.
I think comedy, I think a lot of my career is based on anger. When that thing happened with that man, and then a few months later... Basically, I stopped working for that man when I found out he'd done other stuff to other people. And I felt like I was able to be angry with him then, because I find it hard to feel angry on my own behalf. I find it easier to be angry on behalf of other people. And I was kind of afraid of, I didn't want anything to happen to anyone else. And I felt very powerless about it. But I felt like I wasn't in a position to help people. So I tried very hard and trying to make my career bigger in order to feel safe. Oh. And so that's what I tried to do.
And has it helped?
I think it's like helped and it's hindered it in a way. Like, I definitely think he's had like, I definitely think being a bit mouthy about stuff has not helped me, you know?
Why? Because people don't.
Yeah, because, like, you know, that person has friends and they're not going to think he's capable of doing bad things because he's never shown that side of him. So it would be confusing to those people.
Yeah.
So I know, like, sometimes I go into a room and it's just a bit awkward because I'm like, oh, you know, they think I'm a bit of a mouthy person or a liar, you know? So it's definitely like, like, it's made me determined, but it's also closed some doors, which is fine. You just have to find other doors.
Well, I really like this idea, though, Alison. Well, first of all, I'm sorry that you've gone into rooms and you felt like that. It's a horrible feeling. But the idea of making yourself safe, actually, in the bigger picture, let's go beyond this man, and using your ambition as the kind of big shield is a great, positive, brilliant thought.
Yeah. Oh, but I just never wanted my name in his mouth. If he ever did that to another person, to say, like, I destroyed her career. I just didn't want him to feel that he could do that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like, that's probably why I continue to do comedy. But it's weird to do something with your life that, like, you love doing, but also you want to spite someone.
Yeah, Alison, I'm with you on the, that is taking something and using it as rocket fuel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever it is and however that looks.
Yeah, and I have no doubts that that's going to be very effective rocket fuel for you.
Mm. Hopefully, but I'd love a cleaner, greener fuel. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Yes.
Let's invite you into our virtual rage room.
To finish
it. Just to, you know, wrap it all up. We're handing you a baseball bat.
Yes.
We're asking you, what would you like to see in this room to swing it at? Number one, current news item making you seethe.
There's a big one. Yeah. I think what's making me seethe is, like, it's the same thing about justice. When I was a kid, you'd watch films and you go, everyone would be on the right side of stuff, but, like, we're not. Or you'd look at history and you'd go, if I was there, I'd do it differently. But I'm not doing it differently. I'm scrolling and I think what I'd like to put in there is, like, world leaders and war. Yeah.
Great.
Nice.
Number two, aspect of modern life that makes you fume.
This is, like, no one's fault, but, like, sometimes if I have my heart set on, if I'm in Subway and I don't have cranberry sauce, I have to have a word for myself or whatever. Do you know what I mean? If it's on the menu and I have it in my head and then they don't have it on that menu, it's fine, but I do need to have a word with myself for a second.
I like that you back. Have a word with yourself. Like,
yeah, because it's not the person, it's not the service industry person's fault, and I don't want to make it weird.
Yeah, but this is the self-awareness. This is how we stop ourselves from becoming the twat in some
yes.
way.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So number three, behavior of others, which gets on your wick.
Okay. People that take cocaine at football matches drives me insane.
I love the specifics of this.
Oh, this is like a specific person.
But, wow, is that a big
thing? Love going to football matches because I love shouting and I think it's a nice way of getting rid of your anger.
Oh, nice. Yeah, good. Approve.
It's a good way. And I go with my dad. I love my dad. It's not my dad, by the way. Okay, that's not like a weird thing. But I remember watching a 0-0 game, like Millwall versus West Brom. This lad took coke and he was just like shouting at people on the way to and from the place. And I'm like, this is not like, why would you take cocaine looking at West Brom? It's not the thing that drug should go with. Do you know what I mean? It feels like a waste. And also, just people that are assholes to people in public on the street. Men who make people feel unsafe, and they know they do it. And that drives me insane, actually, is men that just want to scare people. And it's whether just like talking, you know, not even catcalling, but kind of like stepping outside of the polite norms drives me insane, because unconsciously I think they do it to know that people fear them.
Finally, your angriest moment on public transport.
Oh, there's been loads. I remember, so like a big thing back in the day was like I would get street harassment for like wearing outlandish clothes and stuff, and I've always had it. Well, like when I was a kid, I grew up in like a council estate and I was eccentric, and my friends protected me. They weren't eccentric, but I was their acceptable eccentric. And if you had a problem, but they would also slag me off. It would be like but it was fine. I was able to express myself. And then I left that place and went to Dublin, and I would get like just men commenting at me, like, calling me a fat cunt or like just weird stuff, you know? Like, once I had this lad who was like 15, I'd say he was about 15, I was in my mid 20s, and I was sitting outside a cinema waiting for my boyfriend at the time. But he still is my boyfriend. I don't know what he said at the time. I was sitting and he just put his hand on top of my face and left it there for a second and then walked away because he felt he could do that. Like, it was just so weird. So I wrote an article about this is years ago, and I just found the behavior of so back to the public transport thing. I did an article. I felt pretty pumped up from it because people are being quite nice, and I started to defend myself more. And like, once these young lads put chewing gum in my hair on the train, and I just like went mad at them, just rattled them. Or once I was at a hen party, and it was the breakfast after the hen party in a hotel, and it was full of hen and stag parties, and this man came up and slapped his leg on top of the table and started dancing, and I said, will you please fuck off? And he was like so shocked that I would say that. He's like, what the fuck's wrong with you? And I was like, you're dancing on my table. It's breakfast time. I'm trying to eat fruit and fiber. Fuck off. And he did. He fucked off, but it was good. So I get angry. I either go into like, when I know I'm kind of safe, I'll definitely get angry at people on public transport. Yeah, I'm very passive aggressive.
But I don't know, you just sound straightforwardly
assertive.
Well, yes.
I grew up in an estate, and like, lads used to hit the girls as much as the lads. Like, it was a very equal society. And like, I used to get in fights. There was a lad who was about 6 foot, and like, always used to get into verbal rows with him. And then one day he said something about my mum's hair, and he was sitting down on a basketball court. So he was about my height because he was sat down. And I just jumped on him and tried to gouge his eyes out. And we never had a problem after that. Like, the kind of, like, I know that's not the lesson you need to learn from this podcast.
What is the lesson? What is that? Yeah, what happened the then?
Yeah. Horrible physical violence can sometimes make people do what you want them to do, which is alone.
Yeah. So
like prison in a way. You have to make an example and do a horrible thing to someone so no one will ever mess with you ever again.
Yeah. Okay. But in another sense, I do think you're a good anger ambassador for us. Because hang on, this is going to be a seamless transition, I promise.
Yes.
Because we'll ignore the senseless physical violence. You are somebody who says it and calls it and speaks out loud, which not all do.
That's true. Well, I think like...
Was that a good transition? Away?
Sorry, from the violence, yes. Maybe I should say something differently there. Well, no, we had a confrontation and he never did it again.
I think it's... You're somebody that thinks so deeply about all of this really complex societal systemic stuff. And, you know, that definitely is coming through in your comedy, clearly. But when you're at home ruminating, I'm not sure this is the negative. I think this is actually you putting together and working through some things that most of us wrestle with and never resolve and sweep under the carpet because it's too much, it's too big. You're really trying to do something with it and make sense of it. You know, yeah, maybe gouge someone's eyes out occasionally, but...
It's all about the journey, isn't it? The eyes we've gouged along the way.
So I just want to say... I think what Alison was saying about self-awareness was brilliant. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be really uncomfortable if you're being quite vulnerable with somebody and acknowledging that you may have made your own mistakes, mucked up, spoken poorly, whatever, and they can't. And they just go, yes, you were, full stop, and don't acknowledge any part of it themselves.
It's so mean. But also, like, if they're incapable of it because they don't have that awareness, then you're always going to be at loggerheads, aren't you? There's no way that conversation can really connect.
And they're living in their joyous bubble, aren't they? Oh. They're skipping through the meadows, going smell these beautiful flowers.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the rest of us tortured and
anguished. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for listening and sharing in our anger.
And remember, you're not mad to feel mad.
Please like and subscribe. It helps other people find the podcast.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.